This is 1988 Tops, where every card has a story to tell. Your hosts are David McKellis and Matt Kuzma. Let's play ball.
Welcome back to 1988 Tops. David, what's our card for this week?
Our card this week is card number 246, Mike Campbell, pitcher for the Seattle Mariners.
All right, Mike Campbell. This is a Future Stars card, too. Very excited about that. But before we get to Mike, we do have some follow-up from previous episodes.
In last week's Joe Price episode, I suggested that somebody needed to correct Joe Price's Wikipedia because it had a reference to him winning the Pioneer League MVP in 1978. When Joe Price was not on the Billings Mustangs in 1978, he was, in fact, on the team in 1977. We got a note from listener Mike, who pointed out that while Joe Price was on the 1977 Billings Mustangs, we have discussed the 1978 Billings team. Further evidence that Joe Price, even if he had been on that 78 team, probably would not have been the team MVP, let alone the league MVP. Gary Reedus was on that team and hit 462 with 17 home runs and a 1.346 OPS. Mike also pointed out that the Mustangs team was created in 1948 by famed Los Angeles restaurateur Bob Cobb, which is a great name. I don't know if he invented the salad of the same name. He founded the Brown Derby restaurant in Hollywood, and he convinced some of his famous friends to invest in the Billings team, including Bing Crosby, Cecil DeMille, and Barbara Stanwyck, who were all investors in the Billings Mustangs early in their tenure. We also had some follow-up. This week I was in Iowa City, and I had the pleasure of meeting listener Andrew. We opened up some packs of 1988 Topps baseball cards. I pulled a sweet Mike Greenwell, got some Sam Horns, Mark Sullivan. We confused some University of Iowa law students by opening packs of 35-year-old baseball cards in the middle of the law school. But it was great to meet a listener and a friend of the show.
I love that, spreading the word about the 1988 Topps podcast far and wide, all the way to Iowa. We'll go anywhere. If you'd like us to drop by your town, we would love to take that request. You can email us at 1988toppspodcast@gmail.com. But now on to this week's card and Mike Campbell. And why are we talking about Mike today?
Mike Campbell was a future star in 1988. He was part of a big trade for the Seattle Mariners. He played parts of six seasons in the majors. This is a suggestion from listener Damon, who saw a post from Zach Ford. And Zach Ford has a new book called Called Up, Ball Players Remember Becoming Major Leaguers. And Zach talked to a ton of major league players about their first game in the major leagues. Damon suggested, Zach, you should join the 1988 Topps podcast because I'm sure that there's some crossover. And Mike Campbell is in that book. And so we're going to be joined by Zach Ford a little bit later in the show to talk about Mike Campbell's major league debut.
Fantastic. Let's go to the front of 246. And we have Mike Campbell looking like he's ready to catch a throw while he's also tying a cherry stem in a knot in his mouth at the same time or doing something strange with his tongue.
He looks a little bit confused, mouth agape.
It's maybe deep in thought. It's NCAA tournament time, David, and you know that some players, you know, when they're shooting free throws or really focused on their shot, they might do weird things with their tongue, have it stick out or stick to the side. Maybe Mike is just very, very focused here on catching this throw from someone who's, 10 feet away.
He is playing catch. This would be a casual action shot. He's not in a game. I don't think there's any fans behind him. This is pregame in some blurry stadium. This is a nondescript Mariners jersey. Looks like it was off the rack at Kmart.
You do have to appreciate that there's some kind of trim, that there is some gold and white around the neck and short sleeves, and he's got a long sleeve underneath. It's not a great look. This is not a good, the hat is also very generic. Nondescript is about as good as you can say. So I would say middle of the road aesthetics wise.
I think because of the placement of his glove, it also just looks like there isn't a logo on the jersey. This is just generic baseball jersey, blue baseball. This is the third future star that we have covered in the set. We've already covered Kevin Elster and Joey Meyer. Mike is the third of five in the set, so we've got a couple more to come later on.
Let's go to the back of 246. We have Mike Campbell, pitcher, 6'3", 210, right-handed batter and thrower. Drafted by the Mariners in the first round of 1985. Born February 17th, 1964 in Seattle, Washington, with a home in Bellevue, Washington.
This is not the Mike Campbell who played guitar for Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, co-writer of Refugee, Running Down a Dream, also composer of the music for Don Henley's Boys of Summer. That is a different Mike Campbell.
A really great Mike Campbell.
Yeah, that's a future star. That's a past star, Mike Campbell. Born in Seattle, the most populous city in the Pacific Northwest, one of the fastest growing metro areas in the country, the city has the 18th largest population in the United States, around 750,000, up from around 550,000 when Mike was born. Mike split his high school years between West Seattle High and graduated from Newport High in Bellevue, Washington. Bellevue is across Lake Washington from Seattle. Other alumni of Newport High include a guy that we've discussed on a previous episode, Steve Wiebe, from the documentary The King of Kong, which is odd because I was thinking, we've already talked about him on another episode. He was listed on the alumni list for Redmond High School, and we discussed that in the Tom Niedenfuhr episode. However, that has been corrected. Wikipedia has changed. He is no longer listed as a Redmond High alum, and instead is now listed as a Newport High alum. Breaking news. So Steve Wiebe went to Newport High in Bellevue, not Redmond High. Also music video director for, among others, Kacey Musgraves, Doja Cat, Ariana Grande, and Lil Wayne, Hannah Lux Davis. Survivor host Jeff Probst, 1996 National League Rookie of the Year, and 2003 World Series champion Todd Hollinsworth. Seattle Sounders, Reading, and Wolverhampton Wanderers keeper Marcus Hanneman. And relevant to today's card, John Stanton, majority owner of the Seattle Mariners, all went to Newport High School.
Campbell helped Newport High win a state title as a senior in 1982. He threw two no-hitters as a senior and was the most valuable pitcher in Washington. Not only was he a skilled pitcher, but he also had a good bat. His dad was a big baseball fan and coached his three sons, building a batting cage with a pitching machine in his backyard. That's nice. Thanks, Dad. After his senior season of high school, Mike was drafted in the fifth round by Atlanta. And he was also recruited by colleges, both as a pitcher and a hitter. He decided to give college a try, and he went to the University of Hawaii. And when he got there, he learned that he was only expected to pitch. For the Rainbow Warriors, Mike was teammates with Glenn Braggs and Joey Meyer in 1983. And so I guess they figured, we've got the hitting covered. And that takes us to a fun fact on the back of the card that Mike attended University of Hawaii 1983 to 1985 and was Rainbow's MVP his final two seasons.
As that fun fact tells us, Mike was very good as a sophomore and a junior. Those were his final two seasons. He still had a year left of eligibility when he ended up getting drafted. As a sophomore, he started the opener for Hawaii. He was first team all-conference. He followed up that sophomore season with an even better 1985, striking out 145 in 137 innings. He pitched 12 complete games and was named third team All-American. For his college career, he is fourth all-time in Hawaii's record book with 298 strikeouts, fourth with 20 complete games. And after that junior year, Mike heard from a lot of teams ahead of the draft. The night before the draft, he heard from a writer in San Francisco who suggested that the Giants were interested in picking him. The Giants had the second pick in the draft, and so he thought he might go very high. The Mariners called Mike and asked him what kind of money he was looking for. Mike still had a year of eligibility, so he hadn't signed an agent. If he had signed an agent, he would have lost that extra year of eligibility. That would have weakened his bargaining position. But he did get some advice from Scott Boras. Scott Boras, a young agent at the time, told him, just say, I want a fair offer for where I'm drafted. On draft day, this is a really good draft. The Brewers pick BJ Surhoff first. The Giants pick Will Clark at number two. A pretty good pick, considering that they had been looking at Mike Campbell. Bobby Witt went third, Barry Larkin fourth. Then my White Sox made a questionable decision. They picked a catcher named Kurt Brown, considering that they had Carlton Fisk, but who could have known that he would play for another 75 years? Sixth was some guy named Barry Bonds. And then Mike's hometown team, the Mariners, are seventh. And we have a This Way to the Clubhouse.
And that's right, that Mike signed as a first-round draft selection with the Seattle Mariners, June 13th, 1985, by scout Bob Zuck. Zuck was the child of Russian immigrants who spoke only Russian, and he grew up in Detroit, served in the Army in 1946 and 47, then played baseball, signing for the New York Giants before a rotator cuff injury ended his career at age 21. He then went to Berkeley and worked in baseball in Oakland and started scouting in the 1950s for the White Sox, then was hired by the Pirates, where he discovered Willie Stargell. Zuck also scouted Reggie Jackson for the A's and Gary Carter for the Expos, and was also involved in Joey Votto's signing as an 18-year-old. So this is quite a record. He was in baseball until 2003, honored with the George Genovese Lifetime Achievement Award, and passed away in 2005. Quite a life. And an interesting note from his Sabre bio, in 1987, Zuck quit the Mariners and said the Mariners forced him to scout and sign Mike Campbell in the 1985 draft. So maybe the card in the This Way to the Clubhouse is missing the fact that he was scouted by scout Bob Zuck under duress.
The guys who they passed on included Pete Incaviglia, Walt Weiss, Greg Jeffries, Rafael Palmeiro, all selected later in the first round. The Mariners perhaps saw the hometown kid and wanted to have the big story. We know that the Mariners at this time were not good. That's, I think, putting it lightly. Mike said that the Mariners first contacted him 15 minutes before the draft started. That must have been when they asked him, what kind of money are you looking for? He ended up signing for a $110,000 signing bonus and was sent to A-ball at Salinas, where he went 4-4 with a 3.24 ERA in 10 starts. He struck out 50 in 50 innings, started 1986 at AA Chattanooga and had a great record. He was 9-1 in 12 starts, struck out 80 in 75 innings. So putting up big strikeout numbers, had a 1.213 whip. He was roommates with Edgar Martinez at AA, earned a brief call-up for one game at AAA Calgary. And now, going into the 1987 season, would be a great time to introduce our guest.
Yes, our guest is Zach Ford. Zach is an author and chair of the Dusty Baker Sacramento Sabre chapter. He has the new book called Called Up, and one of our listeners suggested we link up. So, Zach, welcome to the show, and can you tell us about the book?
Sure. Thank you very much for having me. I really appreciate it. Called Up is a collection of 109 first-person player stories about getting called up to the major leagues and making your major league debut. The goal for my book project was to capture the feelings and emotions of becoming a Major League Baseball player, and I feel like I was successful in that endeavor. These stories capture the orientation process behind the scenes. While there are game details, the focus was more on documenting what they were feeling when they got the call, when they called their parents or loved ones about the news, when they, you know, went through that initial orientation process, what it felt like to go into that clubhouse for the first time as an actual major leaguer. And then also, obviously, what was going through their head, you know, when they finally took the field, when they stepped onto the mound or into the batter's box. For this book, debut ranges from 1961 all the way to 2018. And there are quite a few stories, about 10 actually, from players who are included in the 1988 top set, including Mike Campbell.
And that was one of the reasons why, when I looked through the list of players who you interviewed, I saw a few that had, let's say, notable careers like Jerry Royce. But then I thought, we're going to have so much to talk about with Jerry Royce that there's no way with his 25 seasons that we could do justice to that and do justice to the book. But Mike Campbell had a relatively short career in the major leagues, only played six seasons. But something that's, I think, really impressive about the book is that scope. 1961, all the way with Sudden Sam McDowell, all the way up to 2018 with Cubs legend Patrick Wisdom. Were there any players that you initially said, that's a guy I want to get in the book? Were there any dreams? I'm sure that we all want to hear the biggest name, but any personal favorites of yours?
I didn't have much of a criteria for this book other than they had some sort of major league service time. That was pretty much my only criteria. Obviously, some of the players that I followed as a kid, that I rooted for as a kid, you know, there's some players, not household names, but your Greg Littons, your Dave McCartys. You know, they're some of my favorite ball players when I was a kid. But when I really look at the stories amongst the book, one of the stories I really wanted to have in the book was the story of Adam Greenberg in 2005. Adam Greenberg came up with the Cubs. He's facing the Marlins, comes in as a pinch hitter. The very first pitch of his very first at bat, he gets beaned. And it's not just a beaning that impacts his play on the field. It impacts his life. And he struggles to try and get back to the major leagues. It doesn't work out. And about 7 years later, there's a campaign to actually get him one major league at bat. And the team that comes up is the Marlins, and they give him that opportunity to have that one major league at bat, that one official major league at bat, since he was beamed when he had his first plate appearance. He faced R.A. Dickey, who was unhittable that year, ended up winning the Cy Young Award. Adam Greenberg strikes out on three pitches, but he gets a standing ovation because the crowd knew what he had gone through, all the dedication and perseverance to try and get back to the major league field after that beating in 2005. That was a story that was national news about a little over a decade ago, and thankfully he shared that story for me.
A great story, and you have a lot of varied stories in here too. You have guys who were, like Mike Campbell, a top pick in the draft, coming off of a big season. You have other guys who sat in the minor leagues for 10 years and finally get that call up. Aside from that one specific, do you have kind of favorite types of stories?
In all honesty, I talked to 149 players. And most of the time I would talk to these players and after I'd hang up the phone, I'd be like, wow, that's a great story. That's one of the best I ever heard. A couple days later, I'd interview another player and I'd be like, wow, that's one of the best I've ever heard. And this, you know, went on for 2.5-3 years of interviewing players. I've always been a bit of a fan of the underdog, somebody who had to, you know, scratch and claw to make it. One of the players that is in the book that I really enjoyed talking to is a former Giant by the name of Jaw Leach. He spent 12 years in the minor leagues before finally getting his call in 2001 with the Giants. He shows up to the clubhouse shortly before his first game, and he says Mike Murphy, the clubhouse manager, gave him a real number, a number 18, I believe it was, and he's the first player in the clubhouse. He says he puts on his uniform and goes into the restroom and looks at the mirror at himself like a little kid waiting for Little League games, right? And around that time, Dusty Baker walks into the clubhouse, sees him, and just laughs and says, you know, after 12 years, I knew that you would be ready on your first day, and then pulls him in the office, gives him a little orientation.
When you have Jaw Leach, who had 10 major league at-bats, and then you have Jerry Royce and Sudden Sam McDowell and those kind of guys who played decades and everything in between. And I found it to be a really compelling book in the way that you put it together as well. With it really does focus on the firsthand account. You don't have the author's voice necessarily in there. It really does come through as the player's account of their first time. And it's really quite intriguing. So thank you so much again for joining us. And the topic of our podcast today is Mike Campbell getting into 1987. And Zach, you're also on the board of the Pacific Coast League Historical Society. So this is also relevant because Mike Campbell was in the PCL and dominant in 1987. He starts at Calgary and goes 15-2 that season with a 2.66 ERA, struck out 130, had a whip under 1.3. And Zach, do you want to walk us through Mike's call-up story?
Absolutely, will do. You know, he got called up during the middle of that incredible Pacific Coast League MVP season. Obviously, he started off really hot. The rumors were starting to fly that he was going to be called up to Seattle. Come around June is when things really started to ramp up. And he gets, you know, the notice, and he gets some of the players saying, hey, this is going to happen. This is just inevitable. Eventually, he gets called in to his manager's office, Bill Plummer with Calgary. Bill Plummer, coincidentally, is in the book as well. But Bill Plummer calls Mike Campbell into the office. And keep in mind, Mike Campbell grew up in Seattle. He had deep roots to Seattle. He loved Seattle. He wanted to play for Seattle, make his major league debut with Seattle. So Bill Plummer, his manager, in Calgary, calls him in the office and says, hey, Soup, sit down. Soup is his nickname, Campbell Soup, blah, 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 right? He goes, hey, Soup, I'm sorry, but you've been traded. And his heart just sank. You know, Mike Campbell had this dream of, you know, taking the mound at the Kingdom for the Mariners. And he says, you know, I'm sorry, but, you know, you've been traded to another team. I think Mike Campbell said that he told him the Yankees, which was, you know, on the complete opposite side of the country. And he just sunk, right, for a few minutes. But he said Bill Plummer came clean fairly quickly and said, no, you're going up to Seattle. I'm just kidding. You're going to be a major leaguer. So he's obviously excited. The first person he calls is his fiance, who is actually a Washington Huskies cheerleader, which adds another element to that story of that local guy made good, right? And he calls up his parents, and his dad is obviously excited. He said that his dad had, you know, growing up, his dad had put a batting cage and pitching area and everything like that around the house. So, you know, he calls up the family, and it's a big deal. He gets called up, you know, about a week or so before he makes his major league debut, just so they can kind of give him a little bit of an orientation process, because he is that big, you know, number one guy that they want to make sure succeeds. In fact, they actually, a few days before he makes his major league debut, they give him a major league debut of July 4th. I don't think you could get much better than that. Playing for your major league, hometown team on July 4th, making your major league debut is just crazy. But a few days before that, he said they actually wanted him to throw a bullpen, but they had him throw it from the Kingdome mound, which was pretty unique. He said he didn't see that very often, but, you know, he did, you know, have a pretty good bullpen session, and they finally settle on, you know, having him make that major league debut the 4th of July at the Kingdome against the Detroit Tigers. And not only is he making his major league debut in his hometown as a number one pick with all this attention, but he's also going toe-to-toe with Jack Morris, the future Hall of Famer. So he says he starts off pretty well in that major league debut, has a very good first inning, and kind of takes it in, you know, and says, you know, starts clapping hands with everybody and, you know, kind of enjoying it in the dugout after that first inning. And he said it was a humbling experience shortly after that with how the major league players were picking up on his curveball.
He got his first strikeout in that first inning, striking out Kirk Gibson, got out of the first inning unscathed. In the second, he would start to lose some control when the Tigers noticed that his curveball was not staying in the zone. He said in AAA, you could get the hitters to chase that ball, but the Tigers were not going to chase that. So he ends up giving up a walk, a single, and a three-run homer to Darrell Evans. In the third, he loads the bases, gives up another run, ends up getting pulled. So his final line for that debut, 2 1/3 innings, 4 hits, 3 walks, 6 earned runs, but he did have 4 strikeouts in those 2 1/3 innings. He was frustrated because, as you say in the book, he had 50 people there to see him, and this big local story had developed around him. It's interesting the way that he puts it in your interview with him. He says he didn't want to sound braggy about that local story, but this must have been a huge deal. But he does come across as pretty humble in the way that he presents it, that he's just stating the facts, and this must have been a huge deal. He ends up sticking around the majors for another start. July 9th, he gives up 5 runs in 3 innings and then gets sent back to Calgary, where he wins his next 5 games and gets called back up. So we have this Future Stars card. And if you look at the line on the Future Stars card, he's 1-4 with a 4.74 ERA. And then you see the front and you're like, this guy's going to be the next thing. But those last few starts of the season, that second trip to the majors was different. The Mariners told him he's going to pitch every 5 days for the rest of the season, no matter what. That gave him some confidence. And in 7 starts, he had a 3.07 ERA. Opponents hit .210. The results weren't there. So he's playing for the Mariners. He's not going to get a lot of wins. He did get his first win of the season, a complete game against the Royals. He had a shutout going into the 9th and then gave up a leadoff homer to Kevin Seitzer. But he got that first win, and it looks like he might be a future star, as the card suggests. That strong close of the season, that outstanding record at AAA, winning the PCL MVP, the future star designation made sense. he also got a lot of these cards sent to him, partially because of that big local story. People wanted him to sign their cards. And that first season, while it ended up not looking great on the back of the card, it ended up being a pretty successful season. And so getting through the end of 1987 and getting past that initial call-up, Zach, your next book, your next project, in quotes, is called Next Up. And what's that going to be about?
And Next Up is the working title. And it's going to be about what's next after players wrap up their playing careers, those post-playing career transitions. You know, what was, the process of finding that secondary career, that secondary fulfillment. I think the misconception amongst a lot of fans is that ball players can kind of just sail off into the sunset and retire. The vast majority, I wouldn't be surprised if it's over 95%, aren't able to do that. So they are in need of finding something else. And there's, you know, it's not just a matter of just finding that career when you're 30, 35 years old. After you've accomplished the dream all of us had when we were kids, you reach that pinnacle, you've reached that success. Well, what comes next? How do you find that fulfillment after baseball? So it's about finding that second identity, because they've always been identified as a baseball player. And it's really kind of hard to replace that excitement, that moment. A lot of ball players go through, you know, identity challenges after their career of playing is done. And I think it's important that fans get a better understanding of that. And then also one of my goals with this project too is that, you know, some of the ball players that are going through these transitions will, you know, read the book, hear about some of the stories, and possibly help them in the process as well.
We'll talk about what's next for Mike Campbell and what he's up to now later on in the show. But Zach, we've definitely found that some of the most rewarding part of doing this podcast is finding out what about in retirement. And that can mean so many different things. Because some of these players, you know, what about in retirement starts at age 23. Yeah. And some it's at age 43. And there's so many of these stories where what they end up doing later in life, you can't even imagine. There's a bar in suburban Milwaukee we could definitely point you to. I think if Gumby Gantner still owns that, and plenty of real estate agents, guys with boats, you know, there's tons of good stories out there that we've already found. And so really looking forward to this next project, whatever form it takes. And I think it sounds like fertile ground for a great book.
I appreciate that. And I'm excited about this. I love working on Called Up, but I also think that Next Up is equally as important.
So, Zach, tell us, where can folks find Called Up and where can folks find you on the internet?
If folks type in Called Up and Zach Ford and Google, they'll find me. But calledupproject.com is the website I've maintained for the book. I have multiple ordering options there. Or they could also go to zachford.com, which is just kind of like my general website for my writing endeavors. But Zach Ford is spelled weird. My parents decided to spell Zach Z-A-K, so it's zakford.com.
Excellent. Well, I have greatly enjoyed the book and appreciate you joining us on the podcast today. Thanks so much for your work, and we look forward to talking with you when Next Up comes out.
I really appreciate it. Thank you very much for having me.
Thanks, Zach. Now to 1988, Mike started with the Mariners, went 8 strong innings in his first start, giving up 2 runs, but the Mariners lost 3-2. He was decent in the month of April, holding opponents to a .221 average. But in May and June, it kind of fell apart. Opponents hit .322 and then .354 off of Mike. He was 3-8 with an ERA near 6 in mid-June when he was again sent back to AAA. And this time around, he didn't dominate. He was 4-4 with a 4.48 ERA and a whip over 1.5. Then went back to Seattle at the end of the season for 3 starts and went 3-0 with a 2.14 ERA. So this time was good. He felt good. He was able to throw a slider for strikes. He was relaxed. And then as quickly as he had found that form, his luck changed. The last 4 starts of the year, his ERA was near 11. His strikeouts were way down late in the year, 3.7 strikeouts per 9 innings the second half of the season, compared to 5.5 in the first half of the season. So 1988, not a great line.
1989, he starts in Seattle. He was hopeful. He said, I hope I'm a key this year. I'm counting on myself for some really big things. Through 5 games, his ERA was over 7. He had a couple decent starts sandwiched between some rough outings. Sent back to AAA in late April. In 16 starts, he was 6-5 with a 4.13 ERA. And then on May 25th, the Mariners made a big trade, sending their ace, Mark Langston, to the Expos for Gene Harris, Brian Holman, and a tall guy who at the time had some trouble finding the strike zone in Randy Johnson. The Mariners also included a player to be named later, and on July 31st, Campbell was the player to be named later to finish that trade. This trade would go down as the best trade in Mariners history. Mark Langston became a free agent after that season and went to California, while Randy Johnson would, over the next couple years, get command of his strike zone and spend 10 seasons in Seattle, win a Cy Young, go to the Hall of Fame. Campbell appeared in 9 games for the Expos AAA affiliate in Indianapolis. Throughout his career, he dealt with shoulder injuries, spent some time on the DL, and kind of bounced around over the next couple years. He's traded to the White Sox before 1990. He spent all year at AAA Vancouver, pitched only 66 innings and had an ERA near 6. Signed with Milwaukee briefly, was released before the 1991 season, then signed with Texas. Between 91 and 92, spent some time at AA and AAA, and was very briefly called up in May of 1992, giving up 4 runs in 3 2/3 innings in his only appearance with the Rangers, and then was sent back down to AAA. All in all, at AAA in 1992, in 11 games, had a 5.71 ERA. So just not a lot of appearances, some injuries, seems like every year dealing with injuries and call-ups and demotions.
1993 and 1994 with the Padres, more of the same. He's mostly at AAA. Earned a brief call-up to San Diego in June of 1994, where he had a couple of starts, and they weren't great. 5 runs in 4 2/3 innings, and then 6 runs in 3 1/3 inning, and was sent back down. Then signed with the Cubs in 1995, and started at AAA Iowa. This ended up being his best year since 1987. 1995 in 21 games, 15 starts, he was 9-3, with a 2.45 ERA in AAA. Struck out 88 batters in 102 innings, and had a whip around 1.2. And that carried over into 1996. In 16 starts, he was 8-2 with a 2.73 ERA. And he got called up again in mid-June. Got a few starts for the Cubs and was decent. 4 starts, 4.05 ERA. Then sent back to AAA. Called up again in September. Pitched some out of the bullpen and was good. 2.13 ERA in 8 games and 12 innings. He had one start at the end of the year that kind of messed up his ERA, giving up 6 runs that raised his ERA from 3.31 to 4.46, but it seemed like maybe there's a renaissance there. Unfortunately, in 1997, he signs with the Yokohama Bay Stars, looking for maybe a change of scenery in NPB to turn things around, but he suffered an ankle injury that required surgery. He did have a couple baseball cards with Yokohama, but he doesn't have any NPB stats on Baseball Reference.
He comes back stateside, pitches 2 years in indie ball for the Gray Harbor Gulls, the Lehigh Valley Black Diamonds, and the Tri-City Posse. And in 1999, at the age of 35, he retired.
So closing the book on Mike Campbell, 6 seasons in the majors, 12-19 was his record in 51 games with a 5.86 ERA. And an ERA plus of 74. As a batter, he was actually pretty good. Since he was initially recruited to hit and pitch, he didn't get a big league at bat until 1994 when he was 30 years old. And he said there was no pressure batting in the National League. No one expected much. Just go up there and take your hacks. But for the Padres in 1994, he was 1-for-3 with 2 RBIs. And at AAA that season, he hit 3 home runs, 2 of them in 1 game. Las Vegas even let him pinch hit a few times. And for the Cubs in 1996, he was 4-for-11 with 2 doubles. Overall, a .357 batting average and an OPS plus of 122. So overall, a much better hitter than pitcher in the majors. How about in retirement?
Mike still lives in Kirkland, Washington. His name is on the Wall of Fame at the baseball field at Newport High School. The field is named for Bob Albo, who was Mike's coach and a legend of Washington baseball. Next to Mike's name, there's another plaque on that Wall of Fame commemorating the 1982 state championship team that he helped to that title. In 2013, along with Todd Hollinsworth, he was inducted into the Washington State American Legion Baseball Hall of Fame. I didn't find a lot about Mike's current career, but I did find an article about an interesting business that Mike was involved in. He was living in Arizona, and after a divorce, he said that he was kind of drifting when he ran into another former pitcher, Steve Towey, and Steve suggested that they start a concession business called Shiska Berry. And they sold strawberries, slices of bananas, and pineapples, and other assorted offerings covered with different kinds of chocolate, crushed nuts, whipped cream, on a stick, like a shish kebab. And they had a couple of stands at Safeco Field, and they would sell these sweet treats at baseball games. There's an article in the Seattle newspaper about it, and I think Shiska Berry lasted into the 2010s. They still have a website. I can't tell if Mike is still involved, but according to Facebook, he is still in the Seattle, Washington area and still goes to Seattle Mariners baseball games. There is a picture of him with his Hawaii baseball teammate, Chuck Jackson, who is also included in the 1988 Topps baseball set.
So, David, we started this episode with a young future star full of promise and potential, drafted by his hometown team. After looking a little bit more and meeting with Zach, what should we think about it?
Mike Campbell was a future star. The expectations were so great for this hometown guy, picked with the 7th pick in a very impressive draft class, one of the greatest drafts in baseball history. And he was so good at AAA in 1987. And then late in that season, he showed what he could do. He deserved that future star moniker. But it just didn't come through. It didn't work out. Mike said he still gets sent these future stars cards. He gets about a card a day. He still signs them. And he feels good about that. The fact that people still remember him and that he had that opportunity. He said, "I kind of beat myself up sometimes. I try to look at those positives, but I also think that my career didn't go exactly how I wanted it to go. Being the 7th pick in a draft where the 6th pick was a guy named Barry Bonds, sometimes I'm just like, oh man, what could have been?" He had a lot of shoulder injuries. He went on the disabled list with tendonitis in his shoulder. He said just about every year of his career. He said, "Sometimes I think it would have been nice to have this big career, win 200 games. But then I look at it as I had a career, made it to the big leagues with my hometown team, and I still have people sending me baseball cards in the mail for autographs. I'm proud of what I did." And this is something that we talk about a lot. Even for guys who played one game in the major leagues, the odds are so stacked against them, and so few players actually make it to the big leagues. As Mike said, "I'm very proud that I was one of the few to be able to do that." And even being as great as he was at AAA, that's something to be very proud of. And he had some really great games in the major leagues. So his career, while I'm sure that he would have loved to be a Cy Young Award winner, his career had some really great moments, and this card is a testament that there was a time where Mike Campbell was a future star.
Part of what's great about Zach's book and of doing this show is that these players come from such very different backgrounds, and some do have all that hype when they come up, and some have none at all. And seeing how different people react to fame, react to success, and react to failure sometimes ends up being really interesting to see and makes for really great stories. So if it gives any consolation, Mike Campbell's still a future star to the 1988 Topps podcast. So thanks again to Zach Ford, and we'll have a link to where you can find and buy the book in the show notes. And David, thank you for the story today. And thank you to you at home. If you've got an idea for concessions business, maybe putting something else on a stick, I don't know, we'd love to hear about it. Find us on Instagram at 1988 Topps Podcast. Thanks a lot, and we'll see you next week.